Would you like to read a tale? A tale about a boy and his sister who would grow up to explore 20,000 leagues under the sea and more? You're in luck. Join Nemo the Lad and his sister Anna as they journey through a world imagined by legendary author Jules Verne and brought to the comic page by writer J.S. Earls and a wonderful crew of artists. Support Nemo the Lad on Kickstarter today and enjoy exclusive rewards like naming an island that appears in the book, multiple variant covers, and more. Simply go to Kickstarter.com before September 19th, 2021 and search for Nemo the Lad.
Welcome to Insight Check, where our very own squid, Catherine Serwinski, interviews one of the playing games with Strangers cast members. We hope you like it.
All right. Welcome to our very first episode of Insight Check, where we will be checking in with the J.S. Earls.
And other victims.
Yeah, another victim. Someday, not this time. So we're going to start off super easy question-wise. I'm just going to have you introduce yourself. We are focusing on the player today, not the character.
I think I've always been involved in entertainment. Mm-hmm. I was actually, in growing up, I moved around a lot. I was actually really involved in sports when I was growing up. And I originally wanted to be a NFL quarterback.
No kidding.
Yeah. Third grade. I mean, I played soccer big time, played all the sports, was more into football. I think I like the balance of strategy. I was good at basketball and stuff, too. I was good at a lot of them, which was great for me because we moved a lot. So it really sucks when you stink at sports and you move to different schools. So I was very grateful for that. Mm-hmm. It's funny. In second grade, I started playing soccer and other sports. And I also started drawing comics in second grade. And that was one of the things that started, I guess, my love for comics. And I also was getting interested in what little bit of anime and things like that there were back then.
Right.
Really fascinated me, especially because I saw like watercolor paintings of Gundam, and I'm just like, oh, robots and water. It's like, that is so cool. And it just kind of opened up my eyes to looking at some of those more pop culture things as art. It's funny. I've been friends with geeks and nerds and jocks, and I tend to lean more towards the geeks and nerds, even though I was very good at sports. Mm-hmm. Not anymore, but I was. Way back when,
in the 20s or something.
But I loved the creative side. I loved telling stories. I loved drawing a lot too. But I loved doing story stuff. I even loved doing some music stuff. I actually played in a Christian rock band for about 10 years, all over the state of Florida. Mostly in the Tampa Bay area, but we traveled mainly in the state. We didn't really travel out of state. At the same time, I was writing and drawing. I was writing for a local entertainment magazine a little bit, doing some reviews and stuff. Honestly, mainly doing it because I got free music. So I got a lot of free albums and stuff. Of course, I got a lot of cruddy things too. But it was fun because I like variety. So I really enjoyed like hearing all the different stuff, like a lot of creative people, I guess.
Yeah. Always moving.
Yeah.
Always going.
Yeah.
Next project.
And
next
always
project.
Having, yeah, other ideas and other things. And yeah. And I was friends with some actors. They were, one of the guys was, he was in a bunch of different shows, but he played like a base commander on the Sequest show from Disney.
Okay. Yeah.
And he was also in Summer Rental with John Candy. And so I wrote some sci-fi stuff for him to read, like a my own audiobook, did my own music and sound effects and all that stuff. And then it was kind of cool because some of the different relationships I had developed at a couple of the different like clubs or coffee houses or whatever. They knew I liked that stuff too. So they actually invited me when our band wasn't playing there to come back. And actually, and this is going to sound really boring, and it kind of was, come back.
Nothing's too boring for us. You know?
They come back and play the audiobooks with just everybody sitting there listening. I mean, granted, it's only like, I don't know, it's like 45 minutes long or something like that. And I started doing more of that. It just got more professional. I got opportunities to write professionally for a weekly and daily comic strip that was an old school adventure comic strip, mainly because they needed a writer because their writer had passed away. And the artist on it knew that I was a, he knew I was decent at stories, but he also knew that I wanted to do, art and stuff. And so he asked me to, if I wanted to come on and at least meet and talk. And cause I was friends with his son who was in a band. And, so that got me into a lot of that stuff. And then that opened up other doors to get more into doing comics professionally and started doing comics professionally. Then I started getting the chance to do some podcast stuff. And then that was when with Ben Avery and stuff was when I was talking about, I was like, cause we both loved audiobooks and we love podcasts and we love comics and stuff. And that's when I was like, dude, it's like, we should do it. Like we should do like our own comic book universe, especially for the fact of, because Ben and I both like a lot of different stuff. We both like superheroes and we both like sci-fi. And most of the time, the only stuff that we were getting hired to write was fantasy. And that's great. Like, that's really scratching our fantasy itch. But because and for those who don't know, Ben wrote 5 or 6 of the Game of Thrones graphic novels. Yeah. He wrote the adaptations for those. Yeah. It's so funny because we were terrified we would not get hardly any people wanting to do voice acting for it. Well, and you probably know when you were starting out trying to do things, like you don't know where to go and how to communicate to reach people.
Right.
And even if you post stuff on social media and put hashtags and everything, it's like there's no telling who's going to see it.
It's very hit or miss when you're first starting out in a project, whether or not something will come of it. So I will say, like, for those that, you know, listen to Playing Games with Strangers that maybe don't know where you come from, can you kind of give us like the elevator pitch of what Supersonic Pod Comics is, which is what we're currently talking about.
Right, which is what we're currently talking about. Yeah. And other people
may not know.
We've mentioned it a few times, more in the beginning, not so much now. But it's hard to explain. It's basically like an audio version of a comic. Very Marvel, DC, mostly that style. Although, I mean, it's more than that, but it's, we wanted to do, like, that was my thing, was that have everything connected, so it's part of the same universe. But then also, like, with the music and with the sound effects, like, not go real, but, like, let's have them loud and stuff and make it sound like
those pow, bam, boom.
Yeah. And there wasn't as much comic-y stuff on when we were starting, because this is like 2.5-3 years ago when we were actually starting, and there wasn't, you know, as much Marvel stuff out and as much of everybody else who's jumped onto superhero bandwagon with Netflix and
big market now.
Oh yeah, it's like it's its own genre. Yeah, it's basically that. It's an interconnected universe with kind of separate series, but they're all connected together.
Yeah.
Pretty much our whole second season, which will be coming soon, is a big crossover. Although we're probably going to have some side like one shots and different things. To kind of fill out some other story things and also give more people opportunity. As I was saying, Ben and I were terrified we wouldn't get enough people. Then as we started getting responses, we were terrified we weren't going to get the right people for the characters.
Yeah.
And then it's funny because you were one of the ones that he was excited about getting. Cause he's like, oh, she's like, and then I think I had a couple like that. I didn't have hardly anybody for my, Codename Super Force. I wasn't getting too many. I had a lot of people try out for Vicus and I think Vox, I don't know, but I didn't.
I think my friend tried out for one of them. So
yeah. Oh yeah. We had a lot of, for Vicus, my cowboy guy, which is so funny because he's one that I threw out there. I just thought it'd be fun because it's based on the United Nations Security Council. So it's the main countries, the main five countries from that who are represented by different things and by different heroes, basically. And I just thought it'd be fun because most of the other countries always talk about America as cowboys and stuff. So I was like, it'd be kind of fun to make our guy a cowboy. And now, oh my gosh, it's like we have too many voice actors. And not enough material.
And it's so easy. I think we've talked about this before, probably on the show, where it's so easy to get into voice acting now because all you need is a quiet room and a microphone.
Right.
And anyone can do it, you know? It's not four people now that, you know, populate the whole market. Anyone with talent can, you know, get themselves a nice microphone set up. And
unfortunately, everybody thinks that they have talent, and a lot of people
included.
I think you're great. I think pretty much everybody on playing great games is great,
except some of them, but we won't name names.
But there's a lot of people that they can only really do like one or two voices, and it's cool to like that we have you guys that are versatile and can do other voices and stuff.
So this is not even a question I've written down. I have so many questions that I haven't even touched. I introduce yourself.
I can stop rambling.
But like on that note, where it's like, you know, when you say there are people that are so versatile, and a lot of times you find out that, you know, it's the people you didn't expect.
Right.
Who sometimes it's not even doing an accent, because a lot of times it's like, oh, do this accent. And if you can't do it, people are like, oh, well, they don't have talent. And sometimes it's just embodying a character, which doesn't necessarily mean, you know, doing a certain accent. It's just being able to portray a character well. Yeah. Have there, like, in your experience in creating projects, have there been times that you've kind of had that moment where it's like, I expected something else, and then this person brought something new, and now I have to, you know, rethink who that character is because they're doing it so much better than I kind of envisioned it?
Well, for me, Ben and I kind of have two different schools of thought on stuff, because I'm a lot more, and I don't say this in a bad way, because, and I will say, Ben and I have both been, I'm trying to think of a polite way to say it, been done over a few times. We both had things stolen. We both had like a lot of stuff. We've had a lot of bad experiences. Ben's response, which I totally understand, is to is like, I want to, you know, control things more. And it's like, when I have something or I have a character, like, I want it this way. And I guess, and I don't know, I don't know this necessarily better, but I think I get too stressed out if I'm like that. Like, I'm interested to see what they bring. Like, I'm a big fan of which I know a lot of people like with the way it ended and everything, but I was a huge fan of Lost when Lost came out. And I was a huge, and it's funny, even though my wife didn't like watching the show that much, she loved watching the behind the scenes stuff with me. And I would watch a lot of it. And one of the things that I really loved about that show, that you don't get on a lot of more serious shows like that, is that they really mixed, because they were on such a short timeline to get things done, they really mixed the characters with the actors. And they had to kind of play off what the actors were giving them. And then write more and more to them, which tends to happen anyways, but like they like only had weeks, before they had to start doing so. And so it was like, but then at the same time, it's like, that's one of the things that show has been like praised for is how good the characters are. And a lot of that is because they let so much of the actors come through.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Lost too, because I was literally just reading a portion of Lost where Josh Holloway, who plays Sawyer, went into that interview and botched the audition.
Yeah.
Messed it up. And the people that were there, like, for the audition loved it so much that they just rewrote who Sawyer was.
Right.
Because he was supposed to be this, like, suave con artist. And then right. he came in with this, like, southern gruff, I hate this. And
yeah.
would share in the interview. And they were like, that's Sawyer. That's what we need. You know, and they had that
yep.
that approach that you do where it's like, the person that's portraying this character can also bring something that
oh yeah,
I didn't expect, you know.
We're professionals and we've been professionals, so we have higher standards than just, you know, I don't know. It's not like it's not your typical community theater. Like we really,
right.
we really want to get as close to what we're thinking as possible. And honestly, the thing is that we're always thinking too, is we have so many side characters and we have so many characters coming in the future that it's like, just because we said no, didn't mean that we weren't, you know, going to choose them. And actually there's a couple people, Mike Williams, who voices Gollum King in Sumo Girl. Mm-hmm. He tried out for Vicus. But he kept, after we turned him down, he kept reaching out to me, just saying, you know, I'll do whatever kind of character or whatever. And I was like, and that's when I was like, well, send me, like I heard you do, you know, Vicus and stuff. And it wasn't exactly what we wanted. But like, I want to like send me a couple examples of stuff that you're, you know, you feel comfortable at or good at or whatever, and
right.
and just so I can hear like the tone of your voice and stuff and the way that yeah. you kind of carry stuff. And there was like one of them, it wasn't that close to Gollum King, but I was like you know, I was like that's not too far off.
That's enough.
Yeah. And then I knew from talking to him too and getting to know him that he's extremely thoughtful. And he's mm-hmm. like, and when we were talking about stuff, he's like, hey, I've got some ideas. And I'm like, you know, whatever, throw them at me. Like, what are you thinking? And like, and like half of them, I'm like, oh, no, we can't do that because of this, or well, we need to do this or whatever. But then some of them were like, was like, he never uses prepositions, and just some other like just interesting things that he threw out, that I was like, yeah, I was like, that's yeah, that's good. I was like, yeah, there's different things like that that we can. And then he had some ideas on the backstory and stuff. And like, I love those things because like, especially when the actors and people are so invested in it. And I just feel like it gives it kind of like that next layer of life. I mean, I will not say that there's anybody that's made me make a big change with the way that they did it.
Okay.
Just yeah. because we didn't know anybody that great at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but.
There's
but,
time for it to happen.
So. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There's stuff. I mean, and there's stuff now though that, yeah, that I'm totally that I'll throw stuff at people. And I say, it's like, hey, you think you could do this or that or like whatever. And, yeah.
Well, if you ever need an extra voice actor for one of yours, just, you know, where to find
me. Oh, believe me too. As much as you want to be a mecha pilot. And that's like one of my like things too. Not like I would want to act as a mecha pilot, but like, I totally like, yeah. Giant robots and mecha in general. Like I love that stuff. So
I'm totally down. All right. I'm going to loop away from Supersonic so I can get back to my list of like 20 questions that That's I have fine. For you. So like we have touched on in your introduction, some of your creative background.
Yep.
So what was one of the first things that you ever made, ever worked on?
Probably comic that I did in second grade, which was terrible, but
everyone's second grade prep.
Oh yeah.
So
I called it Lightning Lad, which obviously there's a light for those who know, there's a Lightning Lad and Legion of Superheroes. Mine was very different. Mine was, it's funny. Mine was probably kind of like a cross between that Lightning Lad and Speed Racer. which was an odd mix, but he definitely looked a little like Speed Racer in that. And it's so funny because my mom, I think she still has it and she's brought it out. But there was like a building, and then I had this really small. No, I had a small. It was that's what it was. I had this tree, and there's this building, but the building is really small. And mm-hmm. The teacher was like, "Why did you draw this?" It's like, "Why did you draw that?" It's like, "Is the building that small? Is this tree like supposed to be like a redwood or something?" You know, it's like whatever. And I was like, "Oh, it's because the tree is closer." It's like the building is way back there.
Perspective, you know?
Yeah. And it's like, obviously I did not, at that age, draw it well, but I understood that things are closer.
But you were enough of a con artist to be able to convince them that why you did it.
Oh, yeah. So they got an A instead of an F. So that's, you know, no. But that was
in school, just a big con, honestly. Yep.
Yeah, yeah, that was when. And it's funny because then from then on, I think my mom encouraged me to do art more. And my dad was kind of discouraging me from doing art. He's like, you know, there's no future in that. So.
And now look at you.
Yeah.
So what is of all the things you've ever worked on, what has been your favorite project?
Oh,
you got to pick one of your favorite children.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's so hard because there's stuff that I've created myself. But I would say, honestly, it would be the Ted Decker Lost Books graphic novels.
Mm-hmm.
Before Ted started hitting it big and before I started doing a lot of professional stuff, we had connected on via email and stuff like that. Mainly just me telling him that I liked one of his novels when it came out, and I saw some stuff that where he said something about how he loved comic books and stuff, and so we connected on that. And then we also both really liked Dean Koontz, and we both really liked Lost, and we just kept connect. So we kept staying in touch. So we were so excited when we actually finally got to work together. I mean, I probably was more than him because at that point he was starting to sell like millions and millions of copies of his books, and he was like at one point.
But you're a world famous artist too.
I'd say more infamous. But he, I mean,
infamous artist, notorious even.
Yeah, notorious anymore. I do still recommend it to people as a great thing to pick up for people that like my stuff. I'll tell them to get that. And it's funny because I know that they expect me to, I don't know, push like my book Pistol Fist, which is kind of like a steampunk.
I'm excited for that.
That was my first kind of big thing that I kind of got known for.
Uh-huh.
And got a lot of respect in the industry. And actually, it's so funny with Diamond Distribution, which everybody was hating on. But a lot of the guys who wrote for the Previews magazine were like huge history fans. So they gave me like a special spotlight in every issue that it was coming out. And so I'm like, I can't complain about them, but I kind of lucked out that they, like there weren't that many like history based comics out at that time. So
yeah, and I have not read it yet, I will confess, but I would like to, and I would definitely, I know you have big plans for that coming up.
Yeah.
I would love to be involved in personally.
I know you the my biggest problem, not that you can't do a mail obviously, since you do that with playing games, but there's aren't that many females in it. There's a Native American female that's in it.
I know one of those.
If she likes to act, let me know.
She does. She's in Supersonic Pod Comics. She happens to be my roommate. So.
Yeah, maybe she would then.
She has Native American heritage.
Does she? Oh, maybe she. Mm-hmm. Maybe she could do it then. She cracked me up because most of the times when I have talked with her. She's been, and I guess, whatever, serious, professional, whatever. But then the one time that she sent stuff into me for the mark.
Yep. For those who don't know, we're talking about Danny.
Yeah, Danny.
Who plays Maria Kane in the mark.
Yeah, she, on this recording, she said, I think she was going to say like the mark, but instead of the mark, she said bark. And then she starts barking like a dog. And it was,
that sounds like something that she would do.
And it was so funny. Like, I really fought. And for those who don't know, this is for our, the radio show that we have on IndieVolt Radio. It was for the New Year's Day episode. And we were saying mark the new year or whatever. And,
I remember recording for that.
Yep. So we did, it was kind of like a double header or whatever with like two of the episodes of the mark that we ran. And, that's what it's for. And yeah, it was so funny because it wasn't just the fact that she was barking, but it was like the way she did it was so funny because it was almost like a cartoon like dog, and she did it like it was so funny.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I live with her, so I get to
experience, I'm sure you get, yeah, you get to see her funny side.
I also have, you know, seen her in professional settings where it's like business, I'm going to conduct this, so on, I'm going to, you know,
yeah,
rep my brand, I'm going to be professional. But like, I like that there was some of that personality through.
Yeah. And honestly, like you know this, because I'm not the most serious person behind the scenes. And I like to
know you
and be silly. And I like,
noticed.
And it's funny, as fun as the entertainment industry would seem for a lot of people, it's very serious and a lot behind the scenes, and a lot of people just don't have any joy, and it's very stressful.
Yes.
Like, I don't feel like people produce their best work, no matter what it is, when they're just so stressed out or so tight.
Right.
Like, I feel like people should be able to be themselves. And if there's something funny that happens, you know, everybody can laugh. It's okay. It's not, you know, like whatever. So, I mean, I try to lighten people up and stuff, and I don't know. But I will, you know, it's great. That's one of the things I've loved about it, is getting to know the people. And definitely,
yeah.
I mean, cause it's hard, because it is, it's like us. And I understand from this side now too, I understand like in Hollywood, how people can get typecast or whatever and stuff too. Yeah. Like Dani, if she had not done that, I never would have thought of casting her in a role where like something funny, or to have her do something funny. It's like, yeah, like I could see her in other set, but I never would have given her funny lines or something funny to do, whatever. And,
like, I feel like I give off that vibe too. So I feel like the both of us are very similar, like, especially playing Maria, playing Denise, where I'm, you know, very like,
yeah,
I'm going to fight crime. Let's go. But you've had the chance to interact with me outside of lines.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say you, both you and Trista both have kind of like a funness or a,
it's not things people mostly say about me.
A natural, like it's more like you guys are like, not like you guys don't work at it. Because you're both very good, but like, there's like a natural, it's just like organic or whatever. Like there's a naturalness with the way that you guys do stuff. And even just from listening to that, just from the way that you do stuff. And when there is something where it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to kick this guy in the face, I mean, just the way you say it has a little bit of like, it's just
kind of fight.
Yeah. It's like a little bit of like fun in it or whatever. Like, it just, I don't know. And it's like both you and Trista like have that where like, before I really talked to either one of you more, I was like, they can do fun. Like, some of the other people I'm not sure about. And some of the guys, there aren't that many guys that I was like, can they do fun? Like, I don't know. Like,
hard to tell, especially now, like when it's all digital.
Oh yeah.
And you don't get the chance, even like, cause we get to communicate through, you know, texting and stuff. So you get to kind of see some of that come out.
Yeah.
It's so hard when you're only getting lines sent to you, but
right. Yeah,
and you don't get to really see anything outside of that.
Yeah, and I know it's tough for you guys too. I mean, because it's what you have to work with, and you guys have to put on a professional face and everything too. But
and sometimes scripts don't tell you much; they just give you dialogue.
Yeah.
So sometimes it can be hard to know what you're supposed to portray. but
yeah,
I'm gonna loop back to
that's fine
questions. I'll keep this one connected. I'm gonna come back to some playing Games with Strangers stuff. But if you had like one or two tips that you had to give to someone that was aspiring to, you know, either be the voice actor or the talent, quote unquote, or if someone was aspiring to be in your position where they are the writer, where they are the creator, what would be your, you know, piece of nugget advice that you would give someone?
One of the things I've seen a lot of with people starting out or people being kind of eternal semi-professionals where they never is they don't whatever it is, like they don't respect the craft enough of whatever they're wanting to do to really learn it and to really grow and get better.
Right.
That like if you want to be an artist, you need to practice a lot. You need to study a lot. And it's got, and I swear, like everybody these days, because like, you know, you can learn about stuff in 5 minutes on YouTube. Everybody thinks don't think you're an expert just because you saw one video or two videos or whatever. It takes time. Just because we have so many resources at our hands now, I can't believe like how many artists have never learned from anybody or never are not used to different books and stuff that they should be familiar with.
Yes.
Like with comics, like if you want to be a comic artist, like you should definitely
read comics.
Yeah, you should. Well, for one thing, yeah, there's a lot of people who's like they have this idea in their head and they don't really understand it or know it. And it's like you really need to you need to do like I highly recommend Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud, because people need to understand it's not just one picture after another. Like there's a techniques and there's a lot of, and honestly, there's a lot of techniques and things that people don't use that they should, which really helps the readers and everything get into it and really separate the comic medium as its own thing. But that's, you know, just talking about mediums, like study the stuff that you want to do like in that medium. Yeah. And like if you like stuff like Lost, watch all the behind the scenes stuff. What, you know, understand a lot of, don't just, so many people assume nowadays, and so many, there's so much stuff that you don't know that you have to do the research on it. And that's one of the biggest things for me is there's so many, even for voice actors and stuff, there's a lot of ways that you guys can get your stuff out, but there's a lot of people who do training videos or different things and and do it's one of the, I will say this too, for all three of the different kind of mediums or whatever that you mentioned, there's all kinds of people who profess to be experts that are not experts. Like do your research on them. Just because you paid $100 to have, you know, to have somebody teach you stuff doesn't mean that they actually, like, do your research on those people to make sure that you're actually getting good advice or that's not outdated advice. Cause there's some stuff that it's just like, there's things with, and I know cause I'm dealing with a little bit of stuff right now, but there's like screenplay stuff that, there's certain things that are not done as much anymore, with the formatting and different things that are kind of a waste of time, and that are really more for if you're actually doing the filming and shooting. It's not really so much of when you're having people read it. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff like that. Which kind of stinks because on the one hand, yes, you can learn stuff from people that were into it years ago, but you really need to understand from people who are doing it now, just because everything's changed so much. And reach out to people. Honestly, one of the greatest things too, that, you know, reach out to people that you enjoy their stuff or that you think won't talk to you.
Sometimes they will.
And especially it's like, I don't know, from my experience, it's been kind of like 1 out of 5 or whatever. And sometimes it's just like, take the time to, you know, support them and kind of befriend them. Don't just expect them to talk after the first time you talk to them or whatever.
I can only speak from like the authoring side of things where it's like, if you want to write, you need to read.
Right.
But, you know, consume what you want to create because you're not going to be good at your craft unless you know what your craft is. So,
yeah. And
do it.
Yeah. And people, and yeah, and that's honestly, and that's good advice too, because there's a lot of people that will read novels but they want to write comics or right. they, you know, there's things like that. It's like, no, you have to read what you want to do, or you have to realize that your style is better suited
right.
for yeah, writing novels. Absolutely. Just because you love comics, maybe you're like, if you really don't like the creative aspect of making a comic and understanding it, then, you know, maybe a novel is more, because there's something that there's a reason why it appeals to you.
Right. And if you're the one that's writing the narrative,
right.
If you're not the, you know, if you're not going to be able to find an artist, maybe you can make a long form narrative and you can't do the
right. Yeah.
Short dialogue of a comic that you yeah. want to do.
Yep.
All right. So I'm going to loop this back to playing games with strangers because we haven't talked about that one time.
That's okay.
Yet. It's been 47 minutes, but I've enjoyed all of this. It's been great. So was playing games with strangers one of your first tabletop experiences?
No.
Okay. What was your first tabletop experience?
I mean, we're saying,
gotta
like,
think back.
Are we saying so like, ago. We're saying like Monopoly? Like, I mean,
no. We're talking about tabletop role play.
Role playing, yeah.
It doesn't have to be D&D, but something of that nature.
No, was it? It would be D&D, but it was, mm-hmm. I mean, long time. It was when it back first came 20s. Out. It was like, I don't know, whatever it was. Early 80s, late 70s when the
yes, when about when it was
Dungeons and Dragons. I know it was technically
you're old, late 80s,
70s, but I liked it. I will say one of the bad things was I didn't have a lot of people to play with, especially when I had to move, because I was when I first started playing, and I was in middle school probably, and I had one of the older brothers of mm-hmm. one of my friends was the one that DM'd, and that was good. And we had a blast, and he was really good and really, really good DM. So I had a good experience with that. But then when I moved, I didn't really have hardly anybody to play with. And I think, and I did have a buddy who was interested, but he wasn't really, into fantasy and stuff as much. And that's when I got into some other stuff like, smaller games like Car Wars and some other small, simple things that you could do real quick, but then also right. like, we did a lot of other things just cause he wasn't really into fantasy. So we did like, which I still love is, Villains and Vigilantes, the superhero.
I like that system.
I have not played the new system. But I've heard interviews, with Jeff D and stuff where he talks about the changes and why they did things. And I think all the rationales for why they made the changes sounded like really smart, for the newer versions. But I played the spy stuff, played apocalyptic kind of thing. I mean, all kinds of like, yeah, I was getting into it. It's just, I didn't have a lot of people to play with. So I probably, yeah. I will tell
the
you
biggest hurdle of any.
Oh yeah. I mean, cause
game is finding the people.
Yeah. Cause we didn't have the online like we do. Now I think we even tried like, some things with some of my friends or whatever, where we tried like doing it by mail. Cause just be, you know, something to, and it's like, gosh, this is taking,
mail? What's yeah, that?
It's like, this is taking forever. But I do think one of the reasons why the choose your own adventure books and some things like that got popular is because of the people that did not have people to play with.
Yeah.
Like that.
It's so true. Like that was, you know, the earliest kind of adventure.
Oh yeah.
Just,
yeah.
I'm going to sit down, read this book, and I'm going to decide how it's going to end.
And that's, yeah. So I got really into those.
The next question I have is, when you first started on playing games with strangers, what kind of expectations did you have coming into this?
Well, like most of us, one of my expectations was that it would not last very long.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe the initial plan was like 4 episodes.
Yeah.
And it was mainly, I know John had talked a little bit about this in the Q&A, but it was mainly to give our listeners and our fellow castmates something to listen to.
Yeah. And well, when it first started, it wasn't playing games with strangers.
Right. Yeah.
It was something else entirely. Cause it was, I want to say 5 of, and not the cast that it is now.
Right.
It was five of us that were going to play superheroes.
Yeah, we were going to do a superhero thing.
Yeah.
Then that's the system. Yeah, the system didn't really work out.
Nothing panned out. Then the pandemic hit.
So we're like, oh, well, let's pick something else. And then nothing else was really working. Although we were like, we still want to do this because it's something that we wanted to do. And
right.
It's mm-hmm. easier, so much easier production wise to do an improv thing. Or a
yes,
or something so, like that. Yeah,
right. So someone is like, as we've talked about, you know, Supersonic Pod comments. You're active in several group projects.
Yeah,
you have created and worked with others in many facets. So how does an actual play podcast feel different? You know, in this improvising sense of podcasting than most of the things that you worked on. How is that, you know?
For me, well, I did not originally want to be in it.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Not because I didn't want to, but because I know how terrible of an actor I am.
Okay.
And I know that Ben can be a very good actor, and he was really dying to do the role-playing thing. I was more on board with doing D&D because I did not think it would, you know, whatever, necessarily have to be evil or whatever, like some preconceptions that some people have. And that's when I was like talking with John saying, yeah, let's, you know, let's go for it. Like to me, cause I listened to, several different actual plays and stuff. So I'm fine with it because I knew some that were more kind of family friendly and I'm like, we can do it. It's not that hard. And if anything, it's needed because there aren't that many out there.
There are not. So if you were to give your, you know, free plug.
Yeah.
To your favorite actual place. What's your top two? We can give warnings if we need to, but
oh no, yeah. There's not really any for my top two. I mean, I do like a lot of other ones, but my two favorites are family friendly. Totally different reasons, although they're connected because some of the same people. My two favorites are my number two is Sneak Attack. Mainly because I got on board with them. They have a similar kind of humor, and there's a couple of people on there that just crack me up big time. I started listening to them like right when they started putting out stuff. And at that time I had like our son was getting an hour long treatment at a hospital that was about 45 minutes from us. So we would listen to an episode, which theirs were about an hour long. We would listen to an episode every time we went and every time we came back. And so it was kind of like this, it was a cool thing for my son and I to, especially since it was one that he could listen to. And he loves games, although he's never really played, not really played role-playing game. I tried to teach them games, but they were too role-playing games, but they were too young when I tried to teach them. So they wanted to run off. I made a Stargate role-playing game and they got so excited with different scenes that like my son and daughter, they would run off into another room and start acting out what we had just done. And it's like, no, we're still doing the story. We're still in the game. And they were too young to totally get that. And it was great because they were so excited that they wanted to go act it out. But it was like, I was like, okay, you guys are killing the flow. Mom's going to be home soon. We're not going to get this like, yeah. But my ultimate favorite. So I had kind of a special thing with that. And then my ultimate favorite, it's so in many, many, many ways, it's so up my alley, is Titans of Altera, because it deals with kind of giant robots and it's a role-playing game. And I know Josh personally, he is crazy smart. Like, and people don't realize it until you get to work with him. And I've told him this because I got to do a little bit with him here and there. And I've told him it, like, I want fun Josh. I don't want business Josh, because Because he is so intelligent that even when he sounds like he's having fun, it's all he's planned it. Like I was like, so you're acting when you're having fun? It was like, because it's just,
you can't have fun and act at the same time.
So that is my ultimate favorite. I will say I did at least learn from Sneak Attack and Titans that to do an orc voice, you have to kind of put your chin out.
Gotta stick it out there.
To do it right. Yeah. And when you don't hear me talk much, it's because my jaw's getting tired.
That's fair. You know,
it gets sore. But honestly, like, I love throwing myself into things that I know I'm bad at, but I have some sort of interest in. So I knew when Ben wasn't going to be able to do it. And John really wanted one of us to be in it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. It's like, I'll totally do it. Like, it's just been so long. And I know I'm not anywhere. Like, I would not consider myself an actor at all. And I mean, I'm allowed.
But you've done great in the show.
Well, it helps.
It's one of those things where it's like,
yeah, it's, I mean, that's honestly, that, but yeah, that's been some of the biggest compliments, is that people like really, because obviously Pooh was like this smash hit, no matter how good anybody else did with anything else. It's like, everybody just loved the idea of having a bugbear barbarian that sounded like Winnie the Pooh. And obviously, and that was one of the big selling points and everything too. I was like, I want to play this awkward character.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of, it's like I am awkward, but I'm so used to throwing myself into stuff.
I think that's super great. Cause like, I think on the, like the same note, like I can relate to, you know, that awkward feeling of like not wanting to like throw myself out there, but which is also interesting for those that listen to Playing Games with Strangers, that Callum and Orbog have connected
right
in that way, because they are both very similar, which I don't think either of us really expected.
One of the things that I was not expecting was how good everybody would act together.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, part of the, which doesn't totally work with how dark John likes to go with a lot of stuff, but one of the kind of mandates at that time was that we wanted to have fun with it, and we wanted it to be something fun.
Which is funny, because I'm not bringing it in a fun direction.
Right, yeah, you're not, yeah, and, you know, and not everything, and even like this is the thing, like even though Steve's character isn't like funny, like he throws out the dad joke one-liners and stuff. And there's stuff like that, and it's just, everybody has their own kind of personalities and stuff. But then just the way that it was like hitting, and even Ben Avery had like told me, he's like, man, I am so jealous of you guys. You guys sound like you're having so much fun.
Yeah, we are.
That was honestly, that was like the biggest thing that was what I was telling John. I was like, we should keep this going, because like, we're having fun doing it. It's like, and we're having fun doing it, and the people listening can tell we're having fun. And it's like, that's a major problem in the pandemic, especially at that time when everybody was locked down. I'm like, people need fun. I was like, and we're having fun.
A whole lot of it.
Yeah. And honestly, most of the podcasts and most of the thing, just like ours, a lot of them, even the actual plays, a lot of them were shutting down.
Yeah.
And it's so funny, because coming from doing the kind of more audiobook fiction podcast thing with all the extra production and everything, I'm like, really? You can't do an actual play like just because you're not, just like, come on. This is so much easier to do than doing all the other stuff
right.
Especially with the work that we had to do, because we had people all over the world.
Which is, you know, it's true of a lot of actual plays that, you know, people all over the place, but still a lot of them crash and burnt.
Yeah. And a lot of them, I mean, you would just stop, which I understand, because you don't have the quality and different things, but it's like, that's part of the whole, you know, knowing your medium, knowing your, you know, whatever your thing is too. It's like, well, okay, you're put in a different situation now. It's like, okay, you know, figure stuff out, figure the best streaming thing that you can do, try to improve, trying to do those things rather than, you know, because, yeah, everybody was thrown for a loop. But I, like for me, just because we had, and like I think at that time we had like, I don't know, like in the supersonic group, we had probably 70 members or something like that. And I'm like,
there's a lot of us. It's a big group.
Yeah, it's like, and that's why I would refer to it as like family, because it's like so yeah. many of us would talk to each other, or we, you know, there were different things come up or whatever, and everybody was so like understanding and encouraging of each other and everything. And I'm like, man, like I just like, it's like these, like, I don't want to leave these people hanging, because it's like all the TV shows are cutting off, all the movies, everything was like stopping. And I was like, man, we should be able to put this out there and I don't know, just have them be fun. And that's probably one of the things that helped Orbog's personality too, as far as just me leaning more into being a little bit silly and being yeah. and saying lines like, look at me, I'm impressive. And just,
which like, I love Orbog's lines in like the mid to late season. Like, I think they're some of the best.
The great thing for me is I get to kind of shut off my writer brain, which the bad thing is for that, because I'm trying to really get into the character and really act, even though I'm still terrible, but I'm trying that when John wants me to describe something or whatever, I'm just like, but I'm the character. I'm not a storyteller. Right? Like, it's hard for me to, I don't know. And if anything, like, I just want to explain, I want to do it and be stupid or silly with mm-hmm. the way that the character is being at the time. Or like if Orbog's upset, like he's not going to be talking a lot. I mean, and there's,
right.
you know, and
it's just like, as someone that also is playing a character that doesn't want to talk a lot when they're upset. Like,
yeah.
It's very difficult to find that balance in a podcast.
Oh yeah.
Where it's an audio medium.
Yeah.
Where you have to find a way to still portray your character, but not give too much that would be out of character.
And it is tough it is really tough doing audio where the people can't see you, where, it's hard.
Y'all get some tears, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, but it's, you know, I don't know. Like, I think a lot of that stuff comes through because we deal with a few people that are like good actors, but they haven't done a lot of voice acting before. Like, mm-hmm. I'll tell them, it's like you, it's like, which I don't think you have a problem with, but a lot of them do, is like, move your body.
Yeah, and, those other
and,
guys.
And do stuff with your face.
Yeah.
Like, when you do, like, really, like, you have to do it and really get into it, because it comes through in your voice when you do that, which I kind of had learned from being in a band and stuff, and with different kinds of singing and shouting and stuff like that. Like, you learn how to do stuff, but it's very, you see that a lot. Like, and you see that with the most professional voice actors, like they move their faces a lot.
Well, there is like even a point in one of the last episodes we recorded, which I don't know where this is going to go out, but where there was that point where like in session where I was doing the same thing, where I was like, I'm distraught. Like, I need to, I need to remove myself from the scene and I need to step away. So I like move away from the mic and I move away from the camera because I'm like, in scene, that's what my character would do.
Right.
So I need to be stepping away. I need to be, you know, creating distance. Because if I'm going to react, I'm going to react from far away. I'm not going to react from like right in your face, which I think, you know, for voice actors, that's very important to know like where your spacing is, because you don't have someone there that's, you know, creating that space for you, that you need to find where that is.
And obviously, in not just with voice acting, but if you're recording an actual play or you're doing a podcast, like you need to kind of wear that emotion on your face because it comes through in your voice.
It does, for sure. Yeah.
Definitely. Again, like you and Trista, because I've gotten mm-hmm. to do some stuff now where I'll be able to see her while she's doing it. And she will just crinkle up her nose and do mm-hmm. all this weird and tilt her fit. And I'm loving it because I'm like, man, just all that is like coming through.
Yeah. You don't know the times that I've spent in my closet making like full on aggressive punching faces.
Yep. Oh, I'm sure for you guys.
Yeah. Lots of fighting.
Ben is always afraid of putting too much on you guys. That's why he doesn't put as much direction in his script as I do. Like, I like to put
more, put a bunch.
Yeah. I like to put a lot. And I tell them, it's like, you don't have to do it and you don't have to do it this way, but this is what I'm thinking. It's like, if you have a better way to get it across, or if you think it should be played different, great. I'm just letting you know, like, totally ignore that if you don't. But I know, and like in a lot of artists and a lot of different people, especially artists, it's like when people want you to do something and they don't give you hardly any direction.
Yeah.
They're so disappointed with what you turn in. And it's like, you gave me like nothing, you know, to try to meet
for sure
what your expectations are, which I'm sure Danny's had to deal with a lot. It gets so aggravating.
Yeah, especially when you're not like, because I know Ben personally. So right. Like, there is that relationship there. But for Danny, there's not.
Right.
So you're just coming into this project, you know, unknown.
Right.
Getting a script and not getting a lot of direction. So if you receive any like feedback after you send in your stuff, like, that's a entirely different minefield to navigate than just being like, I'm going to give you this stuff and I can talk to you because I know you.
Yeah.
Or being like, let me get your feedback first and then decide what I want to do. Because it's especially when you get a script, like providing that script and deciding what you're going to say and what you're going to do and how you're going to deliver the lines. Because I know there have been definitely lines that I've changed because I'm just like, Denise would not say this, you know, because, and not to say that, you know, as a white man writing the script, you know, not to say that you wouldn't understand what it would be like, but, you know, as a white man writing the script, like, this is not what a woman would say in this situation. Right. So I will change little pieces of dialogue, where I'll record things a little differently, or I'll give them this inflection where it's like, I don't know if you meant this to be sarcastic, but it's going to be now.
Yeah.
Because there's no way I'm serious if I'm saying this.
And I'll say that was one of the weird things with season one of Playing Games, which is it's so interesting because of the way that everything's been affected now. But the Sumo Girl crossover was very weird. Even though I really kind of had a good idea of what I wanted to do, like, it's still really weird to write lines for the people that I'm improvising with in because it's like, cause I still wanted that to come across, you know, that these are still the same characters. And that's why I probably said with them more than anybody else that I did stuff with is like, man, you guys, you do whatever you think your character would like, say whatever you think your character would say, because which, it's,
you know, it kind of goes back to that one of those early questions that we had where it's like, you know, the actor is bringing something to the character.
Oh yeah.
Especially when you're writing for someone that's improvising a lot, like,
oh yeah.
You know, just knowing that they're going to know him better than you do.
Yep.
And being able to give them the freedom to express that.
Yep. Yep.
But, all right, I'm going to ask an actual question now, because we've just been rambling for 20 minutes, but I love it. So early Orbog in the beginning of Playing Games of Strangers was a very different individual in many ways.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking back to the start of the campaign, when you first came into this actual play experience, what kind of goals or tenets did you have in mind for Orbog?
You know, to me, it's like a lot of people kind of just very fish out of water, because he grew up on a island, never left the island. And there's lots of people, lots of orcs, lots of like he grew up and that was like everything. And then for him to go out and then kind of have, you know, some of his beliefs challenged. And I think, and I said it in some of the stuff too, is that like he did want to change the opinion of other people about orcs, because there's a lot of racism, but also just the fact that like where he was never accepted, because like kind pretty much like the humans live on one side of the island, the orcs live on the other. Mm-hmm. And neither side was really, with him being a half breed, was never really accepting of him or whatever until he joined the group where he became a paladin and stuff, that was kind of like in the middle and where they trained him and stuff. And he definitely, it's one of those things where he definitely is more head knowledge than heart knowledge. Mm-hmm. He doesn't realize, he never totally really believed it, but he never really totally believed the stuff that they were saying. And which is one of the reasons why most of the time he was not like casting spells and things was
right.
Like he didn't.
I don't remember a divine smite being used one
time. No, there was something one time. There was in when we were dealing with the zombies and stuff. We in the first or second episode, very early. Yeah, like he did, yeah. And even then, it was like we still were getting kind of overwhelmed by him. Like it only, I don't know. Like it didn't have his, it's kind of like, if you lay hands on somebody, they're going to, you can raise somebody from the dead. And then when you do it and they don't, it's like, oh, well, maybe God's will has something to do with that, too. And it's not just what I want to do. And that's kind of a lot of the stuff that he was going through with that. But then I think he felt like the world outside was kind of better than what he dealt with. And mm-hmm. then he was just seeing kind of racism and division in other forms. And so people judging him for being an orc, even though like he's half orc, but they're just immediately assume he's like full orc or whatever.
Right.
And then the whole thing with them judging bugbears and stuff too, really just ticks him off pretty bad and irritates him. The frustration of those things, and then also the fact of that, the keeper can just pop in and do what he wants and when he wants. And he's like, he's like, what's the point? He's like, it's like nobody's.
I definitely relate to that.
He did have a lot of conviction and definitely a different kind of mission. And then it's just, it's like, to me, it's like life and everything too. Cause you have, no matter what kind of thing you grow up in, and that you have these, the ways that you view the world and different things, and then the world just smacks you in the face, and mm-hmm. it kind of shakes you up, and you're like, okay, well, who am I really? Like, and for him, I mean, he just feels like, like there's no point. Like he thinks about that, about the bugbears getting wiped out and stuff and everything too. And it's like, oh, well, Keeper could have stopped that, and there was this huge slave trade going on.
Sure could have, huh?
Yeah. And there's all these other things. And he's just like, he's grateful, but for when he's stepped in to like help us, but it's like, but there's all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Like, cause it's right. Like he feels like there's no point. Right. Like you're not going to change people's minds. Yeah. The good people are going to be good. The bad people are going to be bad. Keeper's going to step in whenever he feels like it. And anytime that seems like that we're going to die or something or whatever. And
yeah, because in game, there's not been a lot of exposition about the higher meaning of things.
Right.
Or anything like that. So it makes sense that he would, kind of move away from that because there's not been.
Well, and then
anything to back it up.
And the example that he's seen has been, a deity that kind of does whatever he wants, mm-hmm. Apparently, because there's things that we consider great evils or people dying or even like your character dying. And then it's like, oh, well, he could step in for other things, but he couldn't step in for that. And it's
as
just,
his father, could like make a difference.
Especially now it's like, dude, it's like, whoa. I think it works because, there's kind of like been a greater plan and he did come back from the dead and everything else, but
yeah, it's sticky business. Let me tell you, as someone living it. as we speak of, early Orbog and where he is kind of now.
Yeah.
So like Orbog and Gareth both came into this campaign as paladins.
Yeah.
But they have always felt very different. They have always had a very different feel to them. So yeah. was there a time in the campaign that contrast stood out the most to you? Or was it just like always kind of this thing that existed?
Yeah, I mean, probably with the whole slavery thing and that or Orbug was willing to, because in his rationale, it was like, you know, it was we're faking it to get in and then we're going to tear it all down. And just with Gareth being like, no, it's like,
yeah, that's he wouldn't even go to the area.
It's like, yeah, it's like, no, that's just wrong. No, we shouldn't even be. For Orbag, it's kind of like, well, that's the only way that we can deal with it. Like, he didn't see, like, another way. But right. He also wasn't stopping to. But he, at the same time, you know, it's almost like I don't want to say righteous anger, but he was like, this is the right thing to do. We're going there to do the right thing. We're going to take down this thing. So we're just going to, I'm going to go do it. We're going to get into it. And then we're going to take it down. Like, there's nothing wrong with this, because ultimately our goal is to just destroy it and free everybody we can and free Christopher and everything. And
yeah,
to me, like, I think that was a great example of, you know, this is showing that Gareth is serious about what he believes and that Orbog isn't, like, because clearly there would probably be rules.
In two very different ways. So Orbog was like, I'm willing to pretend like I'm okay with this.
Right, right. Yeah,
and if it happens, it happens. But
I mean, to me, like, that was one of the biggest things, just because he wouldn't even go. I mean, there's and he won't joke about stuff, and Orbog will, and
yeah,
like he would never. He would never joke about robbing some people. like Orbog did. But I totally love it that Josiah and Pooh just like totally goes along with it. Yeah, we're gonna go rob some people. Goodbye.
And then they do it, you know?
Yeah. And I was, and obviously, like, I was trying to play into a lot of the times when, you know, when it just with the way that he, you know, just, you know, you people be religious or whatever, you know, it's like, clearly he's not taking it as seriously as he should.
Not even a little bit. So in the creative process of coming up with your player character.
Yeah.
How much of you do you think you have inserted into Orbog, and how much is just, you know, facsimile?
Definitely the sarcasm. I definitely love some good sarcasm. I don't know. Like, I like to think that I'm a lot more thoughtful than Orbog is.
I hope you are. Honestly, I hope everyone's more thoughtful than Orbog.
Although he's probably worse. He probably takes criticism worse than I do. I don't know, that's probably some stuff, because my dad would yell pretty bad sometimes when I was growing up, and it definitely made me more sensitive to criticism, especially if I mainly when I feel it's unfair criticism. Then it's like I become this little, you know, whatever, 8-year-old again or like whatever, and I'm just like, yeah, it definitely upsets me, makes me very introverted and everything. And I mean, now it's like being, you know, it is true, though. The older you get, the more you just don't care. Like, I just, it's like I understand, and I've seen so much, and I've seen some of the biggest jerks like do some of the nicest things and vice versa. Yeah. And I've seen some things that like where I did some fantastically nice things, and then I did some terrible things like right after that, like within 5 minutes, and it's like
I don't think Orbog's there yet, but
yeah, no, I still think he's too young, and he's too, and right now, I mean, he's just, everything's shaken, and he just doesn't know, and he's just kind of clinging to whatever, and half the time Pooh annoys him, but
it's such an interesting dichotomy too, because I feel like Pooh is the side of him that is reactive,
right,
which Orbog very much is,
yeah, but he does,
and then
it's the decisions, it's he disagrees with the way that he's reacting, like he doesn't think that we shouldn't do it, like he is definitely, let's go do something, let's do, like like he was saying in the one thing, you know, let's try to get, like, if Zeus is like evil, let's get him to go into a church. You know, it's like, let's, and he was like ready to go and like do it, even though like he doesn't care for churches now, but he's like, you know, this is a problem. Let's go do it. Let's bring him there. And that's definitely more of his. And then he just sees, yeah, Pooh's decisions is just like stupid most of the time.
Which is funny because I feel like he is the in-between between like Callum and Pooh.
Yeah.
Because Callum's like the let's not, maybe we shouldn't.
Yeah.
let's not do anything.
Right.
And Pooh's the, all right, let's go.
Pooh is the forward. Let's do the dumbest thing that will be the most entertaining.
It's weird to say that Orbog is the in-between where it's like the reasonable side of decision making, but he is that weird in-between of the like let's surge forward and the let's not do anything at all.
And just because he is more active, I would say he's actually, even though a lot of people would say it's Pooh, I would say that Orbog at this point is probably the most suicidal character in our party.
Well, questionable.
See, I know you could say that with Callum, but Callum won't do it. Like Callum won't throw himself.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I have.
Yeah, that's fair.
That I've done with Orb. Every time there's been a giant thing or even like the fiend lady, it's like he'll just go right. Like, because he feels like there's no purpose. He's like, what does it matter if I die anyways?
Well, this is, you know, a little teaser for anyone that listens to this and wants to know about the insight. I will often do conversations in character in my head.
Right.
In between recordings. And one of the things that I've thought about just repeatedly is like, oh, this is hopeless.
Right.
As Callum. Of like, why don't I just sacrifice myself because death is better than what I currently have.
Yeah.
So I love the relationship between Orbog and Callum because they have so much in common, but they express it so differently.
Yeah.
I think it's so interesting.
And which is funny because I think that they clicked from the first episode, but they didn't, they didn't realize they had as much in common then as they did.
Which is that conversation they had about the both being half-breeds.
Right.
Which was, I think, the time in character they both realized.
Yeah, I think, Well, and I think even more so now that you know the Keeper's your daddy.
We don't want him to be, but there he is.
Yeah.
Keeping the trend of playing games with strangers questions. This one is, do you have a pre-show routine for getting in character? Just yell at people a lot.
Yeah, no, I mean, usually had a pretty full week. I have arthritis and diabetes, so by the end of the week on Friday night, I'm kind of grumpy. So it's not a far reach for me to.
It's very easy.
It's hard because I do feel like I feel like I know him really well, too, so I don't. That much about, but I'm still not, I mean, I'm not at the level as some of you guys are, that especially not you, where it's like you feel the things that are happening to your character or whatever. It's like I
pretend like I feel what's happening, but that's just method acting, you know.
Yeah. It's because it's weird for me, and I told John this before, it's weird for me. But it's great that, like, I think I mentioned on here earlier, too, that I can kind of, in some ways, at least I try to, because I don't want to spoil things for people, too. I don't want to be figuring too much out in the thing, but I can kind of shut off my writer brain and just try and get into the character. But I like characters anyways, so it's like, I don't know, you know, and I'll hear, you know, totally different characters talking to each other and stuff when I have to write. So it's like, it's not that hard for me, especially him. I was like, maybe if there was a more complicated character.
Depth. He's very complicated.
I don't know that he wears his heart on his sleeve, but he's definitely like most people don't have to guess what he's thinking or his attitude or opinion on stuff, which I like personally. I mean, it's funny. That's one of the reasons why I married my wife, is because she is like that. And there's no mind games. Like I know.
One of many reasons. Hopefully, just that reason.
One of many, but that people that know people like that, that are extremely, can be blunt or honest, can, it can be difficult at times, but it's refreshing at the same time too.
Yeah. very helpful to not have to guess.
Right.
All the time. So in the unfortunate event that, you know, Orbog fell down the stairs on Rose and...
Oh, he's doing his best.
I think half this party is doing their best at this point, but in the unfortunate situation and that happened and you had to bring in a new character, mm-hmm. would you have ideas? Would you share those ideas? Are you keeping them secret?
Because I have really enjoyed a lot of the side characters I've played. I would almost even let it be up to a vote of our listeners or something.
Oh, that would be wild.
I mean, obviously, it'd probably have to be limited to ones that could be in our world, although the Keeper could probably make stuff happen. I don't know. Like, I think any of those would be interesting. I mean, it's just like when we had, which I love the fact that we are getting more of Toki now, because I had said it before that I really like Toki and everything. And it's funny because it's the same thing. Like I was saying that when you had to leave, I was like, I really like Callum. I really wish he was in it more. And I said that about Toki and some other things too. Like, I just love the way that she played that character.
Maybe you're just an oracle. Maybe you can see the future of the show.
Yeah, I don't know. But like me, like as a listener, like I love that when we're able to bring, you know, characters that people really like back or whatever.
Yeah, I agree with that statement. All right. I'm somewhat getting away from playing games with strangers now in my last few questions, uh-oh, but it might still apply because the next one is, what are your current projects that you're working on? What I know are numerous.
I was just thinking about this because writers usually, unless they're like a novelist or something, they usually have a lot of different projects going on. And whereas artists can only have typically like one or two, just because of how time consuming it is to make stuff. I don't know. I was just like, because I think I even just saw again, I saw this the ad thing that popular comic writer Scott Snyder, because he just recently signed a deal with Comixology, and he's going to be putting out like 7 or 8 different series on there with like 7 or 8 different artists.
That is so many at one time.
And you know this too. I mean, since you like to write and everything, that, you know, you'll jot things down or you have ideas and things that you've wanted to do for a while that you haven't done or whatever. And then when the opportunity presents itself, you're like, oh, yeah, I got that. And
yeah,
so there's an interesting mix right now. I'll try to
bullet point it.
Yeah, I should go through this. I actually did something that I think is helpful and I'll just throw this out there. Anyways, what I did was, instead of, because I've been having like the projects listed by the project kind of name, so I can kind of keep track of and try to make sure I hit something every week for each one of the things. But then recently, like a week ago, I was like, you know, it almost gives that kind of cold, like IP feeling like doing it that way. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to change all of my lists of things I have to do and stuff and everything. And I'm going to put the name of my collaborator or whatever on there, mm-hmm. instead, so that I'm mainly making sure I'm getting things done for them to have stuff done too, and to also be able to touch base and stuff. Like there's a couple things that I'm doing with Ben Avery aside from Supersonic, I'm also doing we're trying to finish his Armor Quest novel thing, which is really big because it's basically 6 short novels that we put into one. Because they all kind of tell one big story. And I don't know, we were both kind of feeling like, well, you know, it was like a lot of, we could give the readers more bang for their buck if we put it in one big volume and everything. And it looks really good and stuff, but then we've had all kinds of formatting issues because it's like 15 years old. I told him that I think that like the Word version that he used like back then, like because I think they have different systems now and everything. So the way it's interpreting it, like it keeps getting jacked up. And I was like, man, it's like, if I knew this was going to happen from the beginning, I would have just retyped it or had my wife or my mom retype it, because they're a lot faster than I am. And from in a totally brand new file from the beginning, because it's just, there's just all kinds of weird formatting things that just keep happening.
Lots changed since like 2003.
And that's what people don't understand. Like when the systems change for the computers, it really jacks up those programs even more because of the way that the computers and everything interpret them. And that's, you know, some of the things I'm doing is stuff like that, dealing with all this extra formatting crap and things like that. But I do have the ArmorQuest novel for Ben. Really want to get it out this year for people, because it's been, like I said, it's been 15 years that he had written a lot of it, and it's still really good. It's like a cross between like Star Wars and Lord of the Rings. I mean, it's so good. Doing Cythra audio drama podcast with Jason Brubaker, who's awesome, really cool guy, and we have fun and tease each other a lot. And
I think that's most of the projects you're on.
I mean, honestly, like, I feel like part of my calling as a writer is to send entertaining emails and things to people.
Sometimes that's what you need, though.
You know, because I'm like, you know, they like that's my like my like as a writer, like that's part of my thing, too, is to not just in the stuff that people see, but behind the scenes, you know, and notes or whatever, just to be silly, be clever, like whatever. And not to force it, but just kind of to feel free to do that. It's just been so cool to be able to and bring in the different people that we've been working with on Supersonic. The composer who did the music for the Mighty Nanook thing, that is also the composer for Cythra, and he's doing some really cool stuff that sounds very different from Nanook, and definitely more Supersonic stuff coming. I have with one guy, I have a, this is going to sound kind of crazy, working on a thing called Arthurians, which is something I've wanted to do for a while. It is a cross between Thundar the Barbarian and King Arthur.
Perfect. That's exactly what I would mash up if I had to pick two things to put together.
It's interesting. Well, and now I'm actually really interested in it because the way that I went with some stuff, I'm like, oh, that would be really fascinating. That because I kind of copied Swamp Thing a little bit with one of the things that they did with that. I wasn't doing it for that, but it was mainly because of the way things worked out with the story, that the Swamp Thing is actually not the guy that it thinks it was. It's actually the plants that have like taken on his persona. And then it's kind of shocked when it realizes it's not him. I'm kind of doing that with Excalibur, where it kind of thinks it's Arthur, but it's this guy with the sword arm, but it's not really Arthur, and they're actually looking for Arthur, and it's like the and it's like the ghost of Guinevere, and then it's this half dragon, a relative of Merlin. Pistol Fist, going to be re-releasing Pistol Fist, going to be updating some things because it is about 15 years old now. Have the Nemo the Lad comic coming out through Scout/Scoot, which is their kids line. I have another comic I really want to do called Mannequin, but it's the M-A-N, which I did not know, which you may know this, but the Mannequin, when it is spelled M-A-N-A-K-I-N, that is when it's like the plastic human that's supposed to be like a human.
Right.
But it's about this guy. But that one, I actually want to illustrate myself. I don't know that I can, but I really want to do it because it's I don't know. It's one of those like indie, like you probably like it. It's one of those more like indie vibe, quirky, weird stories. But it's about this guy where and he's kind of like into I was going to have him be like who sells stuff online. And it's like he does like the action figures and the collectible figures and stuff like that. But he has figures in it that represent different major struggles that he's dealing with. And those things are like coming to life and like harassing him. And
it's like little soldiers.
Yeah, kind of like
his
that.
Own personal.
But his own personal, yeah. It'll be like he'll have like three main issues that he's dealing with, and it's like those three things that kind of symbolize that. And then the catch is that the more that he believes kind of their lies or gets deceived by them or whatever, the more like he starts becoming like plastic and like a plastic, okay, like human. And basically it's kind of like, and they become more human. Well, they get more like skin and stuff. And
it almost feels like a modernized twist on Pilgrim's Progress.
Yeah. Yeah. There's elements of like a bunch. That's why I like it, because there's like an element of a bunch of different stuff, and then there's like just a lot of other weird kind of quirky things I want to bring in and stuff that kind of connects to me like personally, a lot of different stuff.
Always be a lot of new ideas, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So
endlessly. So if you could work on or could have worked on any project, no limits, no rules of, you know,
any
reality
project.
If you could have been involved or could in the future be involved in any project, what would it be?
I'm trying to think of the name of it. Well, one would be a Miyazaki film, Nausicaa. That,
okay.
I would have loved to have worked on Nausicaa. And I would have loved to have worked on, or this is my... probably it would be Nausicaa, but I also really, really love the third generation of Robotech, which is Genesis Clamor Mospita. That is like one of my all time. I would say it'd have to be Nausicaa and I'm saying this as I'm looking at, like, I have a giant collection of Nausicaa manga and on my thing. And then I also have some Mospita mangas and an animation cell from it that I have yet to get up on my wall, because we've had really hard time with anchors, but it's sitting there waiting.
Well, someday it'll get up there.
Yeah.
We'll inspect pictures when it does. All right. Last question. So when you're not here, and by here, like not
I was
on
gonna
Skype with me.
Yeah.
You're not here currently, but when you're not, you know, on playing games with strangers, working on one of your bajillion projects that you mentioned, what do you fill your time with? What little time remains when you're not doing all those things?
Yeah.
Where can we find you?
I do like watching shows and TV things. Oh, and I forgot to even mention, yeah, I'm doing a pilot right now.
One more thing's on that list.
And that's my big one that's like hanging over my head. I do like murder mystery stuff when it's done right. I don't like.
I agree. Yeah.
But I do like, I like watching stuff. I like reading some comics. It's hard when you're doing stuff. Like if I'm doing a lot of comics, I'm not reading a lot of comics. And mm-hmm. if I'm working on the TV show pilot and stuff, I'm probably not watching a lot of stuff, just because I almost need like a different mindset and everything to feel like I'm relaxing.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. I like, yeah, watching stuff and
predicting the future and just casual stuff, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Just keeping it casual. All right. So that's where we can find you doing things. Where can we find you online?
Especially because there's a lot of J Searles's, so I can hardly ever get JS Earls. So it's usually Earls JS or Earls.js. Facebook and Instagram, probably the best places to find me. I'm also on most of the things. I'm at Earls.js. I am on Twitter. I am on a couple of other things, but I'm not on there very often. Just because, yeah, of all the different stuff I have to do. And there's a lot of different artists and things that in other countries I work with that use all kinds of weird things. And so I have to be on those too.
We'll provide a full list in the description, and we'll make sure they're all right.
it's not. I'm not as many different places as you probably would be or are.
Nope, I'm not even on Twitter.
Yeah, I don't know. I have said many times, and that's the only reason why. The good thing with me going back on Twitter is that's where I found one of my best Nemo artists. Mm-hmm. Who is but he's a guy that has drawn a lot of that the he's drawn a bit of the stuff for the, like, I don't know what you call it, like the home pages or different things, or like the main the home screens for like Angry Birds 2 and like and Puzzles and Empires and some things like that. Like, but super cool guy. I'm really glad I went back on there mainly for him, but also to try to, I don't know, because I call it a cesspool of hatred.
Yeah, well, it usually is.
And I really avoid it. It's like, so it, like, I know, and a lot of people will say that about Facebook, but I don't think anywhere is as divided as Twitter is. I mean, it's so there is no middle ground on Twitter at all. I mean, which is, I don't know, which is sad, because we can't have real discussions or be respectful or anything, God forbid. But,
well, I appreciated the rant about Twitter.
Yeah.
We'll probably have to cut it out. At 30 minutes. But it's been great.
Yeah.
Chat, asking questions, finding out more. I don't remember what most of them were at this point, but
I'm sure they were good.
So did you figure out how you're going to interview yourself?
Yeah, I'm just going to not record it, and I'm going to sit in my room and cry. I think that's the strategy I think I'm going to use. I will, you know, cast lots to see who gets the great joy of asking me questions.